I'm Alan Fletcher. I'm president of the Aspen Music Festival and School. And our High Notes program, we are in PEPCA Auditorium of the Aspen Institute, but this program will also be broadcast tomorrow, Thursday at 2 p.m. by Aspen Public Radio, and will be available on our Aspen Music Festival website and Aspen Public Radio's website as a podcast. On behalf of Aspen Public Radio, the voice of classical music in Aspen, they're in a membership drive, as I know extremely well because I listen to them all the time. And so I urge you to become a member of Aspen Public Radio at your earliest convenience. Joining me today is a wonderful and quite diverse group in terms of the repertoire that they will be presenting in the festival. So Annalene Lennertz is with us. Annalene is the harpist of the Vienna Philharmonic. That makes her simultaneously the harpist for the Vienna Staatsoper. And she is a professor of harp in Maastricht, and she is a native of the Netherlands as well. Anton Nell, who is very well known to our Aspen audiences, a member of our faculty and also on the faculty of the Butler School of Music at University of Texas in Austin. And you've been coming how many years to Aspen?
The first time was in 1988 as a guest artist, and I joined the faculty in 97.
Yes, fantastic. And also, Seongjin Cho, who is making his debut in Aspen. We are extremely proud and happy. We've been hoping to present Seongjin for a number of years. I don't know if you know that, but your manager knows that. And we are thrilled that it has been possible for him to join us this summer. So, we're going to talk about some personal things with our artists, but I thought I'd begin and also will close by talking about what they will be doing with us this summer. So Annalene is on our faculty, and so she is teaching harp. She is also thus playing with the Aspen Festival Orchestra. But this week, a very special thing, she will be performing on Friday with the Aspen Chamber Symphony in Frank Martin's Petite Symphonie Concertante. And I'm going to talk about that work in a minute. But so that's 6 p.m. Friday for Annalene. Anton is playing every day, morning, afternoon, and evening of the entire festival. But his, I believe, next performance will also be on the same Frank Martin piece. So Friday night, Aspen Chamber Symphony at 6 p.m. Seongjin is going to be with us playing Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto on Sunday with the Aspen Festival Orchestra. So. Let's start just with some personal establishing stories. I told Annalene I was going to embarrass her, and so I will now do that. When we have an opening on our faculty, and this has been true, this is my 14th season, and it has been true every single time there is an opening, a group of us, typically existing faculty in that area, our music director, Asador Centurion, and I get together and we think, who would be the best person in the world to take this opening? And so, for instance, one time we had a violin opening, and what I said to the violin faculty was, who would be the best violin teacher who's not already on the faculty? And they collectively gave an answer, and I called that person pretty much cold, and that person said, yes, of course I will teach in Aspen. I will say, in my 14 years, it is a 100% that the first phone call has produced the faculty member. So, when some years ago we had an opening in harp, and Nancy Allen, our wonderful longtime harp faculty member and harpist of the New York Philharmonic, I said, Nancy, who do you think would be the best person? I had in mind a couple of harpists with major American orchestras that I thought she would say one of them. And she said, there's a new harpist in Vienna, and I think that would be the person. And Asador said, oh my gosh, yes, I've heard about her. I've not actually heard her in Vienna yet. But everyone is just amazed. And Annalene is, of course, that person. But she was very young at the time of her appointment to Vienna. So I called her, obviously called. We had never spoken to each other. And I just described my purpose. And I thought she would say, well, I don't know, I have many commitments and I have, you know, and she just, in the first phone call, said yes. So, flash forward to the next summer, and Annalene had a minor visa issue, but important enough that we got word a week ahead of time that she would probably not make it for the first Sunday. And we had programmed Scheherazade, which opens with a very important harp solo. And so Nancy Allen said, don't worry, the harp student, fellowship student that we have is really good, and she will be ready to play. So I thought, okay, that doesn't sound good to me at all. And thus I went to the first rehearsal, which I don't usually do, but I did. And the, you know, harp student played at the beginning, and I turned to Osador and said, oh my gosh, that's the most astounding harp student I ever heard. And Osador said, oh no, that's her. She got the visa. So that's my story. I that's not a question, I guess. But we are.
I'm glad to listen. Actually,
we are so grateful that you are with us every summer now.
I'm so happy to be here. It's been really, really special, and thank you for having me. I've missed it last summer because I've not been able to be here, but so happy to be back. It's a wonderful place to share music, surrounded by, you know, so many great musicians. The spirit is great. The audience is great. So really thankful.
Wonderful. I'm not going to say anything nice about Anton because. Anton very graciously consented to an interview with me, which we have published in our program book. So I advise you to get a copy of the program book and read the interview, and all of Anton's secrets are revealed in it. But it is applicable to something I wish to talk about, to say that one of many fortunate turning points in Anton's wonderful career was winning the Naumburg competition as a quite young person.
Yes, medium young.
Not younger than you are now. But typically, as is typical of a major competition, there was a lot of work that came with the Naumburg, and that was a good step for you.
Yes, there was. I mean, the prize came with absolutely wonderful engagements. But I think, probably, if I have to say, the luckiest engagement of all of them was my first performance at the Aspen Music Festival. That is how I got here in the first place, as a guest artist. And I still remember playing with the Chamber Symphony and some chamber music in classes, and it was a wonderful fit. And so that's how my relationship with everybody here began.
Yeah, fantastic. Seongjin is a native of South Korea and studied in Korea and also in Paris, but also has a quite notable competition history. So I think at age, at age 15, won a competition in Hamamatsu, Japan. Hamamatsu is called the Music City. It's where Yamaha instruments are made and Kawai instruments are made. And so a very important center for music in Japan. Then just 2 years later was in the Tchaikovsky competition in Moscow and was a prize winner there. And then just how many years later won the first prize in Warsaw in the Chopin competition. The Chopin competition I personally rank as one of the best run of all competitions. And previous winners of their first prize were Marta Argerich and Maurizio Pollini and Christian Zimmermann. So it's a good prize to win. And Seongjin did that. And it was at that time that we said, we must have him in Aspen. And it's taken a couple of years to bring you here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to finally come to Aspen. Actually, my Korean teacher, who is now just teaching in Korea, was a student in Aspen like 30 years ago. So she told so many good things about Aspen and how fun here. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, I'm so looking forward to my first concert in Aspen on Sunday.
Wonderful. Well, I didn't know that about your teacher, so that's a lovely connection. So let's start with your repertoire. You're playing Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto. This is not an unknown or obscure work. I have read a little about your approach, your interpretation, but maybe you would tell us more about that.
For me, this concerto is like, somehow it's like chamber music, because in the beginning of the first movement, the main theme is played by the orchestra, and the piano plays the arpeggio, a little bit like accompanying the orchestra. And also the second movement, there's a beautiful flute and clarinet solo who plays the main theme first, and I accompany them. So it feels me like a chamber music. And of course, it's so popular and famous piano concerto, so I'm trying not listening to anybody else because I just try to like have my own interpretation. So, but I don't know how to do it. But I'm just trying not influenced by the other pianists.
Have you played it many times, or for how many?
Sorry?
How many years have you been playing this
concerto? Since 7 years. So maybe I played about 20 times.
Uh-huh. And Anton, you play the Second Piano Concerto.
I do. I love it. I'm really excited. I won't embarrass you, but I admire his playing so much. I'm very much looking forward to hearing him play this. I mean it. It's going to be terrific.
Thank you.
I'll tell a quick story, which Asador tells me not to tell, but Asador is not here today. The last time, I believe, we had Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto is a very important pianist who was playing it. And as is typical, we had invited him about a year ahead for the date, and he accepted. And then in the rehearsals here, I got quite strange reports that at every rehearsal he had completely different tempi and different interpretations. And I actually asked the conductor, I said, what is going on? And the conductor said, I have no idea. A standard thing is the pianist or the soloist of any kind and the conductor have a meeting ahead of the first rehearsals and discuss interpretation and you know, sort of lay it out. And in this case, the pianist said, I'm gonna do some crazy things. Just go with me. And indeed, I went to all of those rehearsals and they were crazy. And we got to the dress rehearsal and all of a sudden everything was normal. And it was a fabulous performance. So at the dinner after, I said, can you tell me what was going on here? And he said, funny thing, because this pianist was about my age, so quite young, but anyway, he said, I had never played that concerto. He said, no one in my whole life had ever asked me for a Rock 2. And so when you asked, I thought, interesting. Not so easy to learn at, you know, age 60. But he said, and it's something Song Jin said that reminded me. He said, I was determined not to listen to any performance of it while I prepared it and to not be swayed by any tradition. So I decided I had to see what it was like slow and what it was like really fast and what it was like sort of loud and what it was like very pulled back. And he said, I found out that conventional interpretation is about right. Anyway, I love your concept of it as chamber music because I think most listeners wouldn't think of that right away. And yet many conductors like to say that Mahler should be approached as chamber music. No matter how gigantic it is, that is the approach one should have to it. So you have already worked with the conductor and worked out tempi and...
You mean with Slatkin?
Mm-hmm.
This concerto, not yet, but we've worked before like several times, so I just believe in him.
Good. Well, as you've worked with Leonard Slatkin, you will know he's such a wonderful accompanist, if you will. He's so wonderful with soloists that every time he comes here, we ask him to teach the conducting students a class just in concertos. I think we're doing Chopin E minor this week as a test case of how to work with a pianist. So let's talk a little about Frank Martin, because as opposed to Rachmaninoff II, which is just a cornerstone pillar of the repertoire, Frank Martin, Petite Symphonie Concertante, is much less often presented. And it's a, the title suggests, a symphonie concertante would be a concerto for multiple instruments. And it was a very popular form in Paris in the classical era, and we just had one of Mozart's symphonie concertante this week, yesterday, in fact, one for four wind players. So in this case, the commission suggested harp, harpsichord, and piano. So either or both, Anton and Annalene, explain to us why. Why would that be a good idea?
I believe that when he decided to, when this piece came to be, he wanted to write something that incorporated all the traditional instruments with strings. And so what resulted is this, I consider it sort of to be a super sophisticated Brandenburg type concerto with three solo instruments. But what makes it even more interesting is that there are two string orchestras. So there are two in, I think it's 20 players each, sort of on, with the piano sort of being the dividing line between the harpsichord and the piano and the harp and the two string orchestras. So the texture is amazing. It's also a spectacular piece to watch, to see. It's just amazing.
And you are playing piano?
Yes, sir.
Yes. But you could have played harpsichord.
Yes.
And have you played that harpsichord part before?
No, you know, I haven't. I have only played this piece once before, and it was here with Alan Gilbert about 15 years ago. Mm. But when the opportunity came, I mean, when you get the opportunity to play this piece, I just moved everything away from it, because it's one of my favorite pieces, and also it's just so fortunate and wonderful to get the opportunity to play it.
Mm-hmm. And Annalene, you have played the Martin before?
I haven't played it before, and I can only play the harp in this piece, but, but I'm really looking forward. It's really excited. I didn't know it, I have to admit. I didn't know it before, but it's a real discovery. It's so much fun to play this. The mixture of the sounds is incredible. And I think the way he uses it, it's not really solo. It's still a beautiful blend with the orchestra, but just, you know, we're playing chamber music in front, so that makes it really fun.
And as Anton suggested, it's for strings. So the three solo instruments and then string ensemble. So how would you describe the style of the piece? The Frank Martin, a Swiss composer in the 20th century, received this commission during the war, and then I believe the first performance was 1946, maybe. But what would you say about his style?
Well, what impressed me so much is that you know, he has this. It's very clear structure. You have these beautiful lyrical singing passages, but a very clear rhythmical structure. So he constantly plays with those motifs in different ways. And it's just absolutely fantastic how he plans it in all different instruments. It's, you know, you want to play it emotionally, but actually it's a very strict structure. Mm-hmm. So it's the emotion is within the structure, I think.
He arranges the sounds in such a way, the sounds that you'll hear in it. I mean, it's very lush and beautiful in the same. But it is in fact nearly 12-tone, the music. But he arranges it in such a way, in a little bit like, I think, almost like Alban Berg did. You know, where he sort of arranged things in chords and things that logically that don't sound. You know, that don't sound bizarre or modern as such, and that's sort of the phrase structure. But then the you know, as you say, together with this beautiful warm. And also, since they are two string orchestras and often the people are playing individual parts, it is so rich in the texture. It's so beautiful. And then he adds to this catchy rhythmic component. It always catches people by surprise at how just inventive and beautiful and exciting it is.
Well, it is technically a 12-tone piece, and sometimes one doesn't want to say that because it scares people to death. But as Anton says, his approach to 12-tone composition was extremely different from, say, Schoenberg's or Webern's, because there are important tonal elements going on. And to me, in a strange way, it's more a Bach's approach to 12-tone composition, because Bach was actually very concerned with what theoretically is called completing the total chromatic, that is, creating music that will use all 12 pitches in it. And that was also Berg's approach to 12-tone composition as well, rather than a strict mathematical thing. Anyway, that's more theoretical than I meant to get. I thought we might listen to a little of the Martin, just so you get a sense of what they're talking about. And do you think the beginning of the last movement is good? You hear the solo parts really well. Okay, so this is just a minute or two of Frank Martin, Petite Symphonie Concertante. This is a performance by l'Orchestre de la Suisse Romande and Jordan. And I did not know the performers, so I'm going to have to mangle their names. Eva Guibentief, harp. Christian Jakutet is on harpsichord, and Ursula Rutenmann on piano. It gives you an idea. It's a very neoclassical mood, and yet jazzy as well. And I also get a lot of film music in it. I think you can really easily imagine it as being a narrative. So,
yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's very nice and catchy to hear it. We played it. We played through it this morning for the conductor, and it was so much fun.
Great. So. Going back, Seongjin, to your idea about chamber music in Rachmaninoff, you're playing with every orchestra in the world now and major recital tours. Do you get a chance to play chamber music much?
Well, not so much, actually, because of the recitals and concertos performance, but I have some opportunities to play some chamber music, especially in the Sommel Festival, or recently I play with the singer, Matthias Goerne. He's a baritone, and it was my first time to play with the singer. So
That's a good place to start.
And last year I was in Verbier Festival, and I played with Andre Ionita, cellist. I think he's coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what was your repertoire with Matthias?
It was a German romantic program. Wagner, Wesendung songs, and Richard Strauss, some leads, and you know, Hans Pfitzner, he was a German composer, so it was very heavy program.
Wonderful. Well, I'll make a note that next time you come to Aspen, we will arrange to have you do some chamber music. So
yes, I'll love to.
Great. Switching gears, but just thinking about career trajectory, Annalene, one time you and I had a talk about your first year with the Vienna, and I'm thinking especially of your work at the Staatsoper, and you had some amazing numbers of how many different operas you played, and that, what was that number?
That was a big number, yeah. Well, what many people don't know is that we are first the state opera and then the Philharmonic. So it's just the exact same orchestra. Yeah. And in my first year, it was from September to June, I played 45 different operas without rehearsal.
Yeah. 45 different operas. Yeah. And you may not have heard her say, without rehearsal.
Yeah.
So this is something, it's very hard to wrap one's mind around, but because you're simultaneously one of the world's greatest concert orchestras, and you're the orchestra in the pit for one of the busiest of all opera houses. So the rehearsal schedule is what?
Well, three services a day is pretty standard, actually. But I think because we have such a packed schedule and doing so many different operas, you get really flexible learning new things. You listen differently. It's also a lot of chamber music, I would say, in the pit. And I think that what makes the Vienna Philharmonic special, because even if we have not a lot of time to rehearse, we listen differently to each other because we are used to that in the pit. So I think that's a very important aspect of our work.
But at the age you were accepting that position, how many of those 45 operas that you were going to play without rehearsal did you already know because you had played them so many times?
I had never played opera before. Well, the funny thing was that I that year, because I had many concerts the year before, but I knew I wasn't able to do anything else than just, you know, trying to find a place in recordings where the harp would play, maybe mark which voice I would have to accompany, flute, clarinet. I was marking everything carefully in my score, and then I come to the pit and I sit behind eight horns and I don't hear a thing of what I wrote down. So that was really great. So it's been quite, it was quite tough at the beginning, but then once you get through the repertoire, it takes about 3 years, then you get really flexible and it's fun to play.
Yeah, I'm still amazed by that story. A different member of our faculty, Vincent Cole, told this story about Vienna when he made his debut at Vienna Opera. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the Mozart opera it was. Well, I'll remember in a moment. He had never sung the role before. It was perfect for his voice, and they invited him to sing it, but he had never been on stage in this role. And so he arrived and expected the rehearsals, and there were to be no rehearsals. And so an assistant director sat down with him and said, you'll stand here, and then you'll sing that part, and then you'll walk over here, and you'll sing that part, and that was it. And then it was like, see you tonight. So he said, there's a big retchet, and he forgot it. So he knew the next aria, but he knew the conductor was expecting this thing, and there was a harpsichord, but he was not going to be able to sing it. So he went to the lip of the stage, and he cued the orchestra for the aria. Anyway, we did not prepare this, but do you have any funny stories about such things about rehearsal?
No, I mean I've asked to step in a few times where there was not an opportunity to rehearse. I played with the Detroit Symphony once when Gregor Sokolov couldn't do it, and so I stepped in and just walked on stage and played the Tchaikovsky. But it was with Nemo Yerry, who I played with so much, and he was just you know, amazing, but not. I mean, something like this. Well, that's. Yep. And I've never really cued the orchestra like that before.
And Sungjin, when you're touring, how many concertos are you typically touring with at a time?
It depends, but like 4 or 5 concertos per season. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And have you ever been asked to step in quickly, or is it?
Step in. Yep. Yeah, a few times actually. First time was in 2016. I replaced Daniel Trifonov. Mm. He was supposed to play Rachmaninoff 3 actually with Slatkin. That's how we met for the first time. And it was in Lyon in France. And I had like 1 week to prepare. And I haven't played that piece for like 5 years. Mm. So. And it is not an easy piece. So, like I remember that I practiced like 5-6 hours a day only that concerto, and we played 3 concerts, 2 in Lyon and 1 in Aix-en-Provence. Mm-hmm. And the first concert was it was shaky for me, but the second and the third one was much better.
Mm. Well, and Trifonov will be here next week. So that is great. I think we will take some time now, because in previous High Notes, one time we were talking so much we didn't get to the audience at all. So I think I will give you a chance to ask questions of any of our artists now. Well, it's like a Quaker meeting. Okay, well then I will continue. I liked your point, Anton, about the Brandenburgs, because we of course had the Brandenburg concertos last week. And I do both think in terms of form and in terms of even effect that there's a connection to Brandenburg 5. With this Martin piece.
Yes, definitely. We haven't said much about the harpsichord part, but the person who is the harpsichord soloist in our group is Jory Vinokur, who played and who directed and played the Brandenburgs just last week. So he'll be with us. I do think that there's a connection to the Brandenburg Fifth, although I think in this one the three parts. Brandenburg 5 is so it's so much a harpsichord concerto, really. With this one, I think our parts are more equally distributed, and everybody sort of has his or her opportunity to play, and then we all play together too. This is amazing.
So I wonder what it would be like for a composer to have the idea of those three instruments, because there is literally nothing like it.
Yeah, it is so unique, which is one of the opportunities where we all, sort of jumped at the opportunity to actually play it, because even, certainly for a piano and harpsichord, I mean, there's a forte piano and harpsichord, Baroque things, and we have a Salzedo sonata for piano and a harp, but somehow putting all three instruments together plus an orchestra, I mean, it is such a unique concept. And I think, this piece for him was what really put him on the map. I think as once he composed this piece, he became really, it was his international gateway, I think, was mm-hmm. the composition of this piece.
Well, you mentioned Carlos Salzedo, who was simultaneously one of the great harpists and one of the great composers for harp, and Guangzhou the same. But so they knew how to write for the harp. Many composers do not. And Annalene, I wonder what your feeling is technically about the Martin. Did he really understand the harp, or was he helped by someone?
I don't know if he was helped by someone, but it lays beautifully. I mean, it's well written, it's all playable. And I think, as we said before, I think the balance between the three instruments is really, really equal. Mm-hmm. Usually those three instruments are there to accompany in the orchestra and maybe add some color, but now the color is more in front, and I think, but still very much in balance. So it's really beautifully written. There are a few lyrical passages for everyone, a great rhythmical sense. So it's really, really fun to play.
Fun. So, and that makes it like the Brandenburg, because in the other Brandenburgs, the harpsichord is just the continual, and then all of a sudden emerges as this magnificent solo instrument in the fifth. So, well, one of my teachers, Elliot Carter, used to advise students, if they were going to write for harp, said, don't even try to understand the pedaling. Just write what you want and then get a harpist to tell you how to do that.
I totally agree. I think it's really a pity that so many harpists try to scare composers away, because it is complicated, of course, but I think every composer should be still free to write and, you know, have their own language and be free totally in that and not be limited by our limits. I think we have to find solutions afterwards and let every composer be free first.
Yeah. I like that. The first big harp part I wrote was in a clarinet concerto, and I wrote what I wanted, and it had big harp solos. And then I gave it to the player, who was Gretchen van Hosen, who used to teach here. And she came back with it completely rewritten. But it was exactly what I wanted, really. It was just, she said, this will be better up an octave, this will be better down, this will be better if you take this out, this will be better if you put this in, and it worked.
I think if Richard Strauss would have showed his harp parts to harpists of today, they would have all said, it's not possible. But it is possible. You can always find ways enharmonically with pedals. I mean, the pedals are in one way a limit, but they can also be a solution to many things.
Interesting. It might be worth a minute if you would describe what the pedaling does technically, because not everybody knows that.
Right, so we have seven pedals. There's one for each note, and then per pedal, there are three different possibilities. If all the pedals are up, it means it's flat, or how you say, the harp is tuned in flat. And then by moving a pedal one stand down, it will, it will chromatically go half a tone higher, and then even one pedal lower, it will just, I say, make the tension higher of the string, so make the string higher. So per string, we have three possible notes. That's why we can create enharmonics as well.
Right.
Sorry,
so
I still feel a bit jet lagged, so my English is not great.
It's perfect. But so the string that plays, say, middle C, if you will, can also play C flat and can also play C sharp, depending on how you have the pedals. So totally different from a piano, where the poor strings can only play one note at a time.
Poor strings, yeah.
But it means the harpist has to figure out, or someone has to figure out, what key you're in. But if, as in the Martin, you're not always in the same key, then it becomes complex.
I
so the question,
the
question, we will need the mic because right, it's on for the radio audience. The question is, does one thus set the pedals at the beginning of a piece and then it's done, or are you working throughout the piece?
I wish it was done, but there's a lot of footwork throughout the piece usually. Of course, it depends on the composer, but for every chromatic change, we have to do that with our feet, actually. So we keep moving.
Yeah, so you'll want to come Friday, and because Annalene will be at the front of the stage,
we will be.
Right, you'll be able to see all the pedaling happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we have a question down here.
I was curious, of the 45 operas that you referenced at the Vienna Staatsoper, what percentage of the operas were German, as opposed to French or Italian or Russian?
Of course, we have big tradition of the operas that were premiered in Vienna. We play a lot of Strauss. There's a lot of Italian too. We have a lot of Wagner. Less French, I would say. We did some Debussy, of course, his only. But as well as in the Vienna Philharmonic, we play less French repertoire. also in the pit, so it's more, I would say, German orientated. Yeah.
Well, I have actually come to the conclusion of the questions I had. So I think I want to say thank you to Annalene Lennertz and Anton Dahl, who will be playing Frank Martin, Petite Symphonie Concertante, Friday with the Aspen Chamber Symphony, 6 p.m., and Seongjun Cho, who is playing Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto Sunday at 4 p.m. with the Aspen Festival Orchestra. Thank you for being with us.